have a lot of ground to cover here tonight. Let's start with Romans 13 and Luke 20.
Secret Service? Yeah, they're in the back. Okay, watch them in the back. I'm calling Secret Service. Yeah. That's what I feel like with this. But it does give a better quality. Okay, Romans 13. This is often a very confusing passage as far when preachers get a hold of it. Romans 13. So, this is Romans 13, 1 has changed in every new Bible. And some will teach you're supposed to obey everything the government says. Others teach that if the government's wrong, you don't have to obey them. That's not right either. So both of those are wrong, but what's the right thing? Okay, and so we'll try to run some of this, and I want to run through the stages of the government structure of the nation of Israel and the behavior of certain people that God has considered godly through each of those stages. And again, this when we talk about government policies and things like that, the women's you're not real excited about this stuff. And I understand, okay? And I realize that us men, we usually solve all the world's problems in the other room while you really solve the real problems in another room, okay? But this is Bible, okay? And the Bible is the greatest book about government ever known to man, okay? It deals with government structures, the vast majority of the Old Testament. So hopefully this will be helpful, okay? So let's pray. Lord, I pray you'd give us clear minds, and as we go through this, I do pray that you'd help us to understand the words, help us to be sincere and truthful about doctrine. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, there's an old saying is that you can't fight City Hall. Okay, and that is true, but you can fight legally. The agents of City Hall as individuals in this country. And to make sure that we get our footing right off the bat, make sure that people understand that hopefully if you're on line with the Bible and the way I see the Bible, we teach very clearly that the government does not do anything wrong. And we teach that very clearly, and I believe that. But there are people who act as agents of the government who are the wrongdoers. Okay, and so we make sure we get our footing on that. But you know, the sad thing is often it's not what we know that hurts us, it's what we think we know that isn't so that hurts us. Okay, it's what we think we know that isn't so that hurts us. The Bible verse of Proverbs 14:12, there is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And here's what Thomas Jefferson said at the beginning of this country. He said this, "We have the greatest opportunity the world has ever seen as long as we, government officials, remain honest, which will be as long as we can keep the attention of our people alive. If they once become inattentive to public affairs, you and I and Congress and assemblies, judges and governors would all become wolves." Now, has not that been proven to be true? Okay, so Romans 13, verse 1, you look at it, I'll read it from the NIV. And the Bibles that Luke tore up in the play were, I think one was a New American Standard, I think the other's an NIV, so he did enjoy that task. Okay, Romans 13, 1, NIV reads, "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established." So that's obeying them for all reasons. And if you believe that verse in their Bible, they're saying Adolf Hitler was established by God. It did say that. There is no authority except that it has been established by God. Okay, New American Standard, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that which are exist are established by God." Okay, that's the NIV. I don't think the New King James is much better. Okay, so Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for ye are God's ministers, contending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. Okay, the folks that believe that you can disobey government usually teach verse 3 and 4 as, if the governing authorities are not obeying that, then we don't have to obey them either. And that's not right. Okay, notice verse 4, the governing officials are called ministers. Even the Soviet Union will call theirs ministers of defense, ministers. And here we got a bunch of pagan atheists over there whose governing structure still takes words from the Bible. So, how do we handle these things? Okay, as far as this country, as far as any country, what is a person supposed to do? Okay, Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. So you have a chain of authority here. Chain of authority. If you go with these Bibles, these say that you and I and every person is to obey everything, every government has official, has spoken, has passed the law, every single thing. And you realize that if you, has anybody ever read all the laws in this country? Do you want to start today? Do you know when you get done? If you read the statutes of the United States of America, it's a shelf that's, you know, all, you're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, you go up to the law library in Valparaiso, you see the statutes of the United States, and then you've got the statutes of Indiana. And how many volumes of those we got over there in the library? 36? Something like that? That's just a starter. Okay, and so obviously, you and I don't know all those things. Okay, and so what do we do about these things? Okay, Romans 13, verse 1, be subject unto the higher powers, for there's no power but of God, the powers that be are ordained of God. So what do we do? In the New Testament, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but are mighty through God to pulling down of the stronghold. So, in the New Testament, we use verbal words, spiritual words, to make our objections known. In law, this is called redress of grievances. Redress or address grievances to the one who is inflicting unlawful behavior to you, verbally. Okay? Verbally. And this is what the pattern in the New Testament. Okay, and so if you would look at Luke chapter 20. Luke chapter 20. Remember, we always keep context in mind. In Romans chapter 13, what was the political structure of the nation of Israel at that time? Were they not subjects under Rome? They were subjects under Rome. Paul knew Roman law, and Paul knew the law well enough that the public servants who treated him unlawfully were very fearful of him in Acts 16 and Acts 22, because he knew the law. Okay, Luke chapter 20, this is a famous one that Christians often try to make you say that you're supposed to obey everything the government tells you. Luke 20, verse 22. Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar or no? But he perceived their craftiness and said unto them, why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. He said unto them, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. Okay, so they'll tell you you have to pay taxes because that's Caesar, income tax, that's Caesar, and then you give to God what's God's. Okay, but who's Caesar in America? who is the, quote, highest human authority in this country. Going back to the founding documents. Okay, it's individuals, right? People, law-abiding citizens. On July 3rd, 1776, every person in America were subjects to the King of England, every single person. On July 4th, Free White and 21 came in play, and every able-bodied male landowner was equal to the King of England, and the King even admitted this in the documents. When you read, when he finally admitted he lost the war, when he referred to his people as British subjects and to your people as citizens, equal footing with the king. July 4th, 1776, Constitution was not even in the minds yet. Then those people, the highest authority in the land, adopted a constitution for their individual states known as a job description for the political people, and then they did it federally. Okay, but yet the people, the creators, were top. The state officials were second, federal officials were third. Okay, and that's so wise because you keep it locally as best as you can. That's the, where you can make the best influence instead of who's going to go to D.C. You know, you just, it just don't happen. Okay, and so our example in the Bible is we follow Bible pattern. Okay, we just don't take one verse and try to, you know, cram a doctrinal situation in this one verse. So we follow Bible pattern throughout the Bible. And I would say our best example would be the nation of Israel and the Israelites who were in Israel and then how God wrote down the record of their behavior. So I'm going to run through seven stages of the nation of Israel. Okay, when did Israel start as a nation? Okay, remember that the covenant God made with Abraham, that was an individual covenant with a man, that was passed down to Isaac, passed down to Jacob, passed down to his boys. Okay, and then the descendants went down into Egypt, and that's when God called Moses as the first national leader of Israel. They had an army as they were coming out, so Israel became a nation with a national leader, with Moses. He gave Moses the signs and wonders to bring them out of Egypt. So that's the first time Israel is under bondage in Egypt. Exodus chapter 1. So if we go back to Exodus chapter 1, we find the first governmental structure of the nation of Israel. They were slaves under the Hamites in Egypt, and I wonder if the Jews have been asking for reparations ever since then. Okay, we want to get paid back for our slavery. Okay, so here we are. Now we have Israel as a nation. Okay, obviously Moses is not alive yet, but yet Israel as a nation, and Moses is going to be the national leader here as this nation. And in Exodus chapter 1, the powers that be that were ordained of God ordered, Exodus 1, to kill every male child. They were ordered to do that. They were taskmasters in chapter 1. Okay, they were under the subjection of Egypt. In chapter 1, verse 15 to 20, God, the Pharaoh, the powers that be, gave the order, passed a law as a Pharaoh, to kill every male child. Now, did God expect the Israelites to obey all governing authorities as these say? Okay, well, you say it wasn't even written here. I understand that, but the principle. Okay, what happened? You know in that chapter 1, the midwives did not obey the law of the powers that be. They obeyed the higher power, God himself, and chose not to murder these little boys. God's response to that is Exodus 1, verse 20. Therefore, God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. God dealt well with them. Oh, them rabble-rousers of civil disobedience. Aren't they supposed to obey everything that the government says? Okay, so there's an example, the first example. The next example is Moses' parents. Okay, as Moses' mom and dad heard the decree, Exodus 2, verse 2, after he was born, and the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. So she is disobeying an order, a law. She is doing it secretly. In the New Testament, we have a comment on this action. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 is a New Testament comment about Moses' parents. Hebrews 11, 23. Okay, it says, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents. Okay, now obviously that wasn't the faith of Moses. He's only 3 months old. It was the faith of his parents. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw that he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Now, the New Testament often does stuff like that. But you know, in their heart, at night they would wake up in a cold sweat. They'd think about it. Meaning he feared God more than he did Pharaoh. But even at that, he does say in the New Testament, he was not afraid of the king's commandment. Okay, but anybody's, you know, when you understand some laws, you say, well, I'm going to make my stand, I'm just not going to do it. You're going to have some nervous reaction because it's not the norm. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect on the recompense of the reward. So what his parents did rubbed off on Moses. Moses is now 40 years old. And if he would have stayed in Egypt, he had it made in the shade, as people say. He would have had everything. He would have been a military leader. He'd had all the money. He had wine, women, and song. But he chose to forsake that and go and honor his heritage and disobeyed the powers that be, obeyed the higher power, God and his calling, and God honored Moses for his faithfulness. Now, what he was doing in Exodus chapter 7, 8, 9, and 10 was redressing grievances. That's what he was doing. He was saying, oh man, this bondage is too much. Let us go out and worship in a thing. He's verbally redressing grievances of the bondage of the tyrant named Pharaoh or called Pharaoh. And so there's the first stage in the nation of Israel. Egypt. They are under bondage of Egypt. We have examples of the midwives, the examples of Moses' parents, the examples of Moses himself, where nobody is to obey any human authority blindly. Not blindly. Blind obedience to any human authority is not taught by the Bible. I don't care if he is the most godly man in this country. Okay, so number one there, that's Israel under bondage to Egypt. The second stage of Israel, Israel becomes a republic. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. Now, some will say a theocracy, and I don't argue about that. I would call it more specifically a theocratic republic. A republic, you have the Soviet Union's called a republic. They have a constitution. But this would be a constitutional republic, a republic that is designed for the public, republic, where the laws are designed to protect the individuals in the public. That's a commonwealth. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. This is the only time you find the word commonwealth in the Bible that I can recall. And it says, Ephesians 2, 12, that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world.
Okay, there's that word, commonwealth. If you get a Black's Law Dictionary, look up the definition of commonwealth. Here's what the definition is. A commonwealth generally designates a republican frame of government, one in which the welfare and rights of the entire mass of the people are the main consideration rather than the privileges of a class or the will of a monarch. The privilege of a class, that's socialism, oligarchy, Nazism, fascism, democracy, any other one of them types. Okay, so that's a commonwealth. Now, we have four states in the Union that do call themselves commonwealth. The rest was call themselves republics. Okay, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, and Massachusetts. The only reason I know that, I have been ingrained with that. Whenever I go to Pennsylvania, Uncle Roy makes sure I get that, those four commonwealths. And he makes sure that I get Pennsylvania. So I got that down pat. Okay, a commonwealth. No, not Massachusetts. I may have flunked the thing. I know Kentucky's a commonwealth too. Virginia, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts. I think that's the four. Okay, so I only got a B on the test. Okay, a constitutional republic is that form of government in which the administration of affairs is open to all citizens. That's Bouvier's Law Dictionary. This is where we have the phrase called the common law. The common law. Law is common amongst the people. Okay, and I went through this long time ago. It's been a while since I went through the common law. The law is common with people. We're talking about lex scripta and stuff like that, and lex rex and rex lex and all that stuff. If you remember the barking dog and everything, Rex. Okay, so we went through some of that. If you don't remember, so what? Doesn't matter. Okay, so the basic constitution for the nation of Israel would be, very simplistically, Deuteronomy. That would be probably the best one you could run with. And some of Exodus. Leviticus would be the religious aspect. Numbers is just some historical stuff. But Deuteronomy in particular. Deuteronomy. Many of our documents come out of Deuteronomy. Okay, it's the second giving of the law. Okay, and so, now how we know is a republic more so than a theocracy is because in a republic, the people can overrule the president. Okay, in our country, you have three main votes that you can overrule any president. Okay, one is at the election ballot. Okay, the other is at the voting, that's the election ballot. The other is a jury. Okay, and the other is a grand jury. Okay, those are your three big places where you can vote against the governing authority. Now, how we know that Israel is more of a republic than a theocracy is because, remember, the people overruled God, the theocratic authority, the monarch, the theocratic, when they wanted a king. The people chose against God's first wishes. That's why it just wasn't a theocracy. A theocracy all by itself is God is in control no matter what the people say. Okay, so that's why you'd have to kind of call it a theocratic republic because the people foolishly got their way to change it from a republic to a monarchy. Now, God gave them forewarning. So that will be step three. Now, under the republic, it's obviously you obey the laws that is for you. Okay, Deuteronomy. And so you really, under the republican form, you just had individual times where you'd have a person do wrong, and then they have the justice and everything, and that's the way it's supposed to be. The third stage of the nation of Israel, number three, is a monarchy. 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Okay, in 1 Samuel 8, this chapter is the chapter when the people came to Samuel and said, we're tired of these judges, and we're tired of this situation, so we want a monarch. We want a king who's going to go out and fight for us. So what are they asking for? It's like Katrina. The government's supposed to help us. You got a bunch of pigs sucking at the sow. That's what we got in America. Okay, and so instead of people picking up their own thing and trusting in God, now they want a king to go out and fight their battles. Well, when it came time for the king to go fight their battles, when a big guy came out in the valley named Goliath, and it was time for the king to go out and fight a battle, did he do it? No, he didn't do it. So you can't trust him. Okay, you should fight your own battles. Okay, so in 1 Samuel 8, chapter 8, verse 9, Samuel is protesting. Protest. A Protestant. He is protesting verbally. Notice, with words. He doesn't get an army together and starts killing and hacking people. Even under this covenant. He protests verbally and he warns them, this is what's going to happen, he says. He says, and you read down through there, he's going to take your daughters, he's going to take your sons, he's going to put them in his army, he's going to make them cook his meals, he's going to charge you 10% of a tribute. 10%. Oh, for those days, huh? You know, there's one guy we saw going in the store down in Indianapolis, you know, and we was talking about Ron Paul, and he stuck out, and he said, well, I'm a Huckabee fan. And I just kind of said real quickly, I don't know if you heard me, I said real quickly, well, he wants a flat tax, 23%, but Ron Paul wants it flat or down to zero. Okay, so if he wants a 23% flat tax plus your state taxes, that's over 30%. Here this former Baptist preacher is wanting you to give three times the amount to your government than to your own local church, if he analyzes it. You see, and so in other words, the government is a triune God to them over their church. But, okay, 1 Samuel chapter 8, you have there where the king is going to take 10% of their income. This is called a tribute. Then the first king turns out to be a tyrant. The second king turned out to be good, David. The third king, he had a time of peace. Because of David's fightings and, you know, establishing a thing. But he ended up taking a bunch of money from the people, even to the point where he got 666 talents of gold per year. It's an interesting number to go with that. After Solomon died and went to Rehoboam, and now you had the fourth stage of the nation of Israel. This is Israel under subjection. Well, you've got some kings in there, but that's still a monarchy, a bunch of rotten kings as the kingdom turns. It's a soap opera all the way through there. Okay, but then the fourth section is Israel under the subjection of Babylon. Okay, that's the fourth stage. Israel loses their constitutional republic. They voluntarily threw that off. They become a monarchy. The monarchy goes through the stages of a good king, bad king, good king, bad, 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 good, bad, 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 you know, all the way through there. Then here comes Nebuchadnezzar. And he surrounds Israel, you know, Judah three times, okay, and conquers them. Now we have the nation of Israel under subjection to Babylon. So, were they to be blind followers of Nebuchadnezzar? Daniel chapter 1, verse 8 gives us our answer. Daniel 1, verse 8. Daniel 1, verse 8 would give the motives why you or I possibly could not obey purported laws. I say purported. They may or may not be. If it does not say at the beginning of the law, if you read it particular, most courts today are not charging people a violation of law. They're charging them with a violation of a statute. That is different. It is a corporation. Okay? Statutes, rules under corporations. Okay? Because the law has to say, be it enacted. If it doesn't say that at the beginning, it is not a valid law. Okay, and so those were the statutes, or they're charging it not under statutes, I'm sorry, I misspoke, under the code. Some of you probably picked that up on my mistake there. They charge you under the code, okay? Daniel 1 verse 8 would be our intent, hopefully our heart's intent. It's not a monetary problem we have. Our problem is Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Hopefully our motive of any, quote, civil disobedience is because my conscience wants to follow my God. That should be our purest motive. Okay? A lot of guys, you know, I'm not opposed to militia. I know how the media talks about militias. But many guys in a militia are just a lot of Rambo types, you know. And, you know, that gets ridiculous. Okay, but the thing is if a person wants to defend himself lawfully, okay, that's the choice you have to, you, between you and God. I'm not saying yay or nay what to do. I'm saying that we redress our grievances verbally first. This is what Daniel did in 1 verse 8. What did he do? He went to Melzar. He is a subject under tribute. Is he obey everything Melzar tells him to do? No. He appealed to Melzar and he said, I don't want the king's meat. I don't want his wine. Would you please give us a test? And fortunately, the test worked out. Now, there were three fellows in chapter 3 who was ordered by the government to bow down to this pagan statue. They did not obey the governing authority. They chose civil disobedience. Again, that word is a tough one. I've talked to Gene about that word. He said it's kind of a hard word to define. A lot of people have different ideas on that. He would say it's a better term is to obey the higher power rather than the lower power. Like in Acts 5:29, it says, I'd rather obey God than man. Okay, so that would probably be the better term, obeying God rather than man. So in Daniel chapter 3, man said to bow down, worship this image. God said, have no other gods before me. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, that's their real names, obeyed the highest power, God. Okay, but now they were going to be punished by the lower power, man, going to throw in a fiery furnace. They were willing to be thrown into the fiery furnace no matter what. And they said, if God delivers us, okay, if he does, if he doesn't, that's up to him. And of course, we know the story where God chose. So, what our example is with Daniel and the three Hebrew children is the Bible does not teach blind obedience to any human authority, be it government, college, you know, church, you know, anything. We are to obey the highest power of the Lord God himself. Okay, but that's something on certain issues. If you want to fight every issue, you're never going to get done now in this day and age. You know, if you want, I mean, when I got this van, we got out of Louisiana, there I had it right in my hands. You know, I had title of origin, bill of sale, and I knew I had in my hands the highest lawful title that I could have for this van, not vehicle. And I just wrestled that with a month. What do I do? I don't want a plate on this thing. If I give a plate on it, then I'm giving it to them. What do I do? And that's an issue you could fight. But, you know, I chose to let the dirty bums. Even though I know what's going on, there's bigger fish to fry. Okay? And so there goes my title of origin, which is the first I've ever seen. You know, and some folks will say, well, you gave in. Well, everybody gives in to some issues. I mean, you can't fight everything. Okay, and so in this day and age, it's obeying our highest authority, and we want to obey God. You know, do I want to go to jail for a driver's license? I think it's kind of dumb. Going to jail over a preaching license like John Bunyan? I think that's a worthy thing. Okay, and so there we have Israel under subjection to Babylon. Next step, Israel under subjection to Media Persia. Now, as you can see, we're going to go down the line, basically, except there's no record that I know of anybody under Greece. Israel under subjection to Media Persia. The example of that one, we have Daniel again, Daniel chapter 6. Okay, now, and here he is, one of the three presidents under King Darius. Now, when you got somebody high up like that saying, you know, that you're rebelling against, you know, civil disobedience, that gives some folks more confidence. You know, you ought to hear Ron Paul's take on civil disobedience. He doesn't shy away from that. He encourages that. How many of them are going to say that? Okay, so here we have Daniel 6. You know the story. Some guys were trying to frame Daniel. They wanted to catch him. And so they pass an idiotic law that you can't pray to anybody for 30 days except the king. And Daniel obviously disobeyed. He obeyed the higher power. He obeyed God rather than man. And man quickly ran up there and caught him in the most heinous crime. And they brought in the ATF. You know, guns were loaded and had the FBI agents and got everything out of it and pulled everything out, you know, and then threw him in jail and confiscated all his Ron Paul coins. You know, got everything and then threw him, you know, and then the king was upset with himself that he got hoodwinked. And he sent someone down to try to figure it out. Man, there's got to be a loophole. There's got to be a loophole. Look for that loophole. Couldn't find a loophole. And had to throw him in the den of lions. And, of course, we know the rest of the story. And God miraculously intervened in that case. But, again, the example is, again, the Bible does not teach blind obedience to any governing authority. Never. But the problem we have in our country, people say, well, the policeman said this, I have to do it. Hey, if he said, go jump off a cliff, you're going to do that? If he says you can't stand in the sidewalk to preach, what are you going to do? Well, that choice is yours. You're in control if you are in control. Question number one, is this public property? And if the answer is yes, well, now you are really in control. Now, you can do as you wish, but you should do it lawfully, and I would encourage a tape recorder of some type. But you see, the problem is that people don't know their rights. And a man who does not know his rights is no better off than a person with no rights. And so a lot of times you got to kind of take the lead on some of these things when you know the law. Okay, and so number five is Israel under subjection to Media Persia. Now, we do have a couple more examples under this time period. There's an entire book written about it, Esther. That's Media Persia. Okay, so what's the story goes in Esther? Haman wanted everybody to bow down and kiss his feet, and one guy, Mordecai, said, ain't doing it. And so you get that ain't out of the Hebrew or that old Babylonian talk or Media Persia. Okay, so he said, I'm not doing it. And, of course, we know Haman passed this law that he's going to kill such and such people on such and such day. And Esther the queen appealed redress of grievances to the king. Okay, and the bad guy was found out. The bad guy was hung. The good guy was put in command. People rejoiced. Okay, again, the example is there's no blind obedience to any human authority. Another example in the same time period, okay, is in Ezra chapter 4, 5, and 6. And I have a lot of footnotes in there basically showing some of the lawful things that a person should do if you decide to obey the highest power versus the lower power. Okay, in that story, very quickly, very simplistically, the highest authority in the land, Cyrus, ordered the rebuilding of the Jewish temple. That was the highest human authority. He ordered rebuilding of the temple. The people began rebuilding the temple, Ezra 4. But you see, the local building inspector and the fire marshal caught wind of this, and they didn't get a permit. Well, why did they need a permit? The highest human authority said they didn't need to. So they got building, but here come the bad guys in. It scared all the people. They stopped building. Haggai and Zechariah were two prophets at that time period. The Haggai, the little book's got two chapters. Zechariah's got 14 chapters. Haggai chapter 1, he basically said to those people, is it time for you to dwell in your sealed houses and this house lay waste? And you'll find Haggai back in Ezra 4, 5, and 6. And Haggai had went to the law library on a few occasions, and he dug up that law, got a certified copy. You even find the word certified back in there, Ezra 4, 5, and 6. Got a certified copy of the document that King Cyrus said we can rebuild the temple. Went down to the local peon, the local building code inspector, and said, hey, look what I got. You can take a flying leap to the moon, pal. And he said, we're going to go back to building. Well, they just started, obviously, I didn't say all that stuff, but he got the people motivated to start building it again. Again, here comes the ATF and all the guys going to try to stop the thing. And they just hauled up the sign, the highest law in the land, and they had to leave him alone. Okay. Again, what's the rule? The rule is first know the law. Haggai knew the law. Zechariah knew the law and obeyed the law. And when the de facto officers, de facto is a key word, meaning false, when they came in under color of authority, color of title, color of having the semblance of but not having the substance of, that's a nice one to ask a police officer. Are you dealing with me under color of law? Throw that on them. Okay, and so there, when they came under a color of law, true law overthrew color of law. Okay, and so you have Haggai. Haggai's obedience to the highest power in the land, Ezra 4, 5, and 6. And Ezra 4, 5, and 6 are some of the things that a person should learn to do. And the thing to do, and of course, the ones that have taken a law class know this, is that when you are asked a question by an official, you answer the question with a question. And what you're doing is you're playing hot potato. And you always put the burden of proof back on them. So he throws you a question, throw it back. Ask him a question. I told you can't be on this sidewalk. Oh, is this public property? Well, yes, it's public property. But I want you to get off this sidewalk. Oh, is that a lawful authority? Well, yes, that is a lawful authority. Oh, is that authority? What statute regulation are you trying to enforce? I need to call my sergeant. He gets his bullet out of his pocket, puts it in, and then you got the tape recorder in front of him, and he's real cautious what he's going to say. And then you just start asking him a bunch of other questions. Are you a de facto officer? Are you operating under color of law? And with in front of the tape recorder, and most of the time, they'll start backing down. Now, if they... Remember, he's got the gun. He's got the nightstick. Don't get beat up for no dumb reason. If he starts whipping out the nightstick, you just look at him. Are you going to hit me? Are you going to hit me? Or if he pulls out a gun, says, oh, I'm just here for the guns. You get real loud, draw a crowd in. Rodney King type. How did he make millions? Had a video camera. And so the thing is all verbal. Tell them what you're going to do. I'm going to put my hand in my pocket and get something out of my hand. It's not a knife. Now I'm going to get this out of my pocket. I'm protesting what you're doing. I'm objecting to what you're doing. I object to what you're doing. Everything's verbal. If you don't object, they think you like it. I'm punching you in the face. Do you like that? No, you say it verbally. Okay, and so Israel under subjection of Media Persia shows us again from Daniel's behavior, Mordecai's behavior, Esther's behavior, Haggai, Zechariah's behavior, that the Bible does not teach blind authority to any human government. The sixth one, Israel under subjection of Rome. Okay, John chapter 8. Jesus Christ said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." America, land of the free, home of the brave. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, John 8:33. Here's what these guys said. They answered him, John 8:33. We be Abraham's seed and were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou shalt be made free? What a bunch of idiots. They were subject to Rome right at that time. The most deceived people in the world are people who think they're free, but they're slaves. You know, and so here these guys were subjects under Rome. Now, what's our example? Our example is the Lord Jesus Christ. Render unto Caesar the things that be Caesar's, and unto God the things that be God's. Luke chapter 2, there was a taxing. Luke chapter 2. Probably the best one is Matthew 17. And then we can run Paul, but time is running short. Okay, Matthew 17 is usually the famous place where people say, in response to paying taxes, and all that stuff. Found a book on Nico Verhoef's library when I was in Austria, when he was in Austria. And it was, the title of the book is Those Dirty, Rotten, Stinking Taxes. And it was a book about America. And I found this in Australia, or in Austria. And so I came back and looked it up, found it, and I bought about 6 or 7 copies. You know, each of them individually, like 50 cents a copy, then $50 to get them mailed to your house. I don't know how much you got. Okay, but so I got a bunch. And it's a good read, okay, about Americans and how they do all they can to keep their money. Okay, in Matthew 17, it says, verse 24, and when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, doth not your master pay tribute? He saith, yes. Typical fundamentalist. And when he's come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, what thinkest thou, Simon, of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute, of their own children or of strangers? Strangers, foreigners. Only in America do the foreigners get all the subsidies. Okay, children, another word for citizens, or another idea of citizens. Because the contrast is strangers, is foreigners, children, the contrast is those two. We would say citizens. Fellow citizens you'll find over in Ephesians 2. So I'm not far off in this. I'm not off in this at all. And then he says, then the children are free. That's how it was in this country until 1913 or 16 or whenever the 16th Amendment came in. Okay, and then he said, notwithstanding, lest we should offend, go to the sea, cast out a hook, take up the fish that cometh up, and when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money, that take and give unto them for me and thee. Of course, nowadays you've got to catch a whale, okay, to do that. Okay, so this is Israel under tribute, under Rome. And we see the Lord's reaction. Another example would probably be the best example for you and I is Paul's. A good read for Paul is Acts 16. You don't have time. The last few verses, Acts 16. It's kind of funny. And then Acts 22. Those two places. It's humorous how Paul behaved. Okay, so he was unjustly punished. He was unjustly condemned. He was a Roman citizen. And when he made that known to the magistrate and to the guys who'd beat him up, they got scared to death because he now can charge them with a crime and they could be going in a pokey for a long, long time. And they wanted to get him out of there as quietly as they could. And he came back and said, hey, if they want me to leave out here, make them come down and fetch me out of here. In other words, he wanted them to know that he knew the law. And they were deathly afraid of him. Okay? And basically, a lot of times, if you let the law be known to these people by certain questions, the more fear builds up in their eyes because they know that you know the law. Okay, and so Israel under subjection of Rome. Paul is our example, the end of Acts 16 and Acts 22. The seventh structure of the government of Israel is today's, 1948. Israel is an independent state, but yet in Israel is operating more as a socialist state nowadays. But the problem with Israel now is Israel, as an independent state, is subject to the political pressure of the United Nations. And that's what they're under right now. So what are they supposed to do? Hey, they got to figure that out. And I know what this country should do as far as the Bible itself. But what they do in the seventh stage is, you know, between they and God. And but again, the Bible, there's no place in the Bible that says you and I are to be blind followers of any human institution. Okay, and the way we make known our objections now is verbally, speak it out known, and ask questions constantly, because when you ask questions to them, they are required in our society, when you ask questions to public officials, they are required by law to give you an honest answer. And that is one of the funnest things to do, because most of them don't know any of the answers. You know, well, I have to do this. What am I doing? This? Well, I don't know. I just thought we had to do it. There was a lady in Chicago. Yeah, this last quick story. She was a nurse. This was a policy of the hospital. Okay, and her first day in a job, she was a nurse in her later years. She waited to go to school later, you know, after her children were grown. She became a nurse, I think, like when she was 48. And she was going to work in a maternity ward, okay, in that area. And her first service was supposed to be helping in abortion. And all the nurses thought it was hospital policy that they had to do that. And this lady just said, I'm sorry, you're going to have to transfer me, give me a different, you know, person I could serve under. I am not going to do that. And they gave her a little hassle at the time, and so she stood her ground, asked her friends to pray for her and everything, and hospital policy was changed because this lady stood her ground, and then the other nurses, oh, we didn't know this. And see, now they have freedom to express. We don't want to do that. We thought we had to, defying their conscience. And here's one lady who stood up there in Chicago and changed the policy. And of course, this is some of the roots of this country. So the thing is ask questions. Now, I'm not telling you when you go to a stop sign, you have to stop and ask somebody, do I have to stop at this stop sign? You know, I'm not talking about that. Okay, but when you don't know certain things, ask questions. When you don't like what's going on, verbalize it. And more important than anything, have a tape recorder. Ideally, video, but next best, audio. Okay, that's enough for that. That's seven stages of Israel. Hope it's a help. Let's pray. Lord, I do pray you'd help us to be faithful to your words. I pray you'd help us to be faithful to you. And Lord, I just pray that you'd have mercy on this country, and by God's grace, if it's in thy will, I pray, God, that you'd pardon this country and allow us to have our liberties retained and get more liberties, and Lord, so that we can bring more glory to thee. In Jesus' name, amen.